Sponsorship of this KQED podcast is provided by San Francisco State University's graduate business programs offering 5 accredited advanced degrees, the SF State MBA, rigorous, real-world, respected, open house schedule, and more information at mba.sfsu.edu.
Funds for the California Report are provided by Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information available at chevron.com. The California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org. And URS Corporation, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical services to public agencies and private companies. URSCorp.com.
This is the California Report. I'm Rachel Miro. Coming up, the rough realities of working in the warehouse industry in the Inland Empire. Also, young filmmakers in Santa Barbara race to make a 10-minute movie in 10 days. And a new multimedia installation shines a spotlight on rural Californians with big dreams, like one pint-sized boxer from Riverside County.
This little guy over there, I mean, he likes to brawl. You get him in the ring and he'll fight anybody. He can be almost dog-tired, barely walking. He'll say, "Is that all you got?"
We've got a former state poet laureate writing original poems for our show now. He's not pulling any punches either.
Will Squaw Valley settle for recycled sewer water to keep snow slopes alive?
It's the California Report. We begin today's show in the Inland Empire, where the unemployment rate is running a fair bit worse than the state average. In December, the last month for which we have data, California's rate was 11.1%, in Riverside County, 12.8%. There are plenty of entry-level jobs in the region's bustling warehouse industry, jobs that pay $10, $12 an hour and more. But many of those jobs are temporary or part-time, and some workers say they're being subjected to unfair working conditions. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas reports.
Two men in their mid-20s settle into the backseat of a car parked on a quiet street outside a large windowless warehouse. They're on a break from their jobs at one of the biggest warehousing firms in the Riverside area. They asked that we not use their last names because of possible retaliation from their employer, Schneider Logistics. They say their jobs are to load and unload boxes destined for Walmart stores.
Cargamos cajas para que van para la compañía de Walmart, los contenedores.
The day before this interview, the California Labor Commissioner fined a pair of temp agencies that supply workers to Schneider. One of them, Rogers Premier, was fined $600,000 after a surprise inspection uncovered violations that include withholding overtime pay to dozens of workers. Rogers did not respond to numerous requests for comment.
En esos días trabajamos promedio de 45 horas.
Mínimo.
One of the men says they're usually given an estimate of what they'll be paid during any given week, but their paychecks don't always match up with the wages they're promised. Both of them pulled crumpled pay stubs from their pockets.
Pues no sabemos en realidad cuánto nos pagan. Nos dan un estimado, pero no sabemos si está bien hecho.
They worry if they complain too much, they'll be fired.
$50. Los cheques por 6 días, por 6 days.
It's not unusual.
Guadalupe Palma is regional director of Warehouse Workers United, an advocacy group.
Most of the workers that we come in contact with, they're hurt on the job, wage theft, no breaks, no lunches. It's rampant throughout the industry. And we estimate about 100,000 warehouse workers just in this area, the Inland Empire.
About 118,000 workers, says Inland Empire economist John Husing. This in a place with a disproportionately low rate of college and high school graduates and an unemployment rate stuck at around 13%.
All right, you tell me where a person coming out of high school or who didn't graduate from high school can go get a job at $10 to $12 an hour starting.
Husing says the alleged violations at inland warehouses are rare, the actions of a few bad apples that should not tarnish an otherwise reputable industry. an industry with roughly 380 million square feet of space in the Inland Empire, making it the warehousing and distribution capital of North America. Hulking mega warehouses fan out in all directions from a ribbon of freeways in the city of Ontario, about 70 miles east of Los Angeles. It's an endless parade of diesel trucks, ferrying goods from the ports of LA to inland warehouses and points east across the United States.
It is the fastest growing part of our economic base.
But why the Inland Empire? John Husing says there are a few reasons.
The answer number one is dirt. We have the ability to absorb very, very large facilities. And that takes a lot of vacant land.
It's what made the region such an attractive place for orange growers over 100 years ago and home builders in the decades since. But it takes more than dirt. And Riverside investment banker Jamil Dada says the Inland Empire's got that, too.
The governments are friendlier. The land is cheaper. Traffic is not as bad. It's easier to move the stuff from here to the other states, saving companies an hour and a half of traffic.
And right now, business is booming. Many warehouses find themselves doubling up on part-time and full-time help, but they're leaning on temp agencies to cut costs and deal with seasonal shifts in demand. Dada, who also sits on Riverside County's Workforce Investment Board, says it is preferable if warehouses would hire full-time employees and didn't rely on temp agencies. But he says companies have to stay nimble in this rough economy, and local government and business leaders want to hold on to proven job creators.
We're asking them, hey, just hire whatever, even if it's temp, at least you're hiring. So we're being a little bit flexible in letting the employers operate most effectively and efficiently that they can, with the hope that in a couple of years when cash flow gets going, people start spending more money and times are better, that these employees then will become full-time employees.
Warehouse workers and their supporters recently staged a rally outside that Walmart distribution center near Riverside. The North Carolina-based temp agency, Rogers Premier, who employs the workers, abruptly severed its contract with the Walmart facility last month. About 100 workers were told they'd be laid off at the end of February. The workers claim it's retaliation for cooperating with recent labor investigations. On Wednesday, a federal court judge issued a restraining order barring the mass terminations. Court documents cite a warehouse supervisor allegedly telling workers that anyone who complained would be, quote, destroyed and thrown away. Daniel Lopez has worked at the facility for about 3 years.
The decision the court made helped us a lot because we have more confidence that when we spoke up for our rights, it changed something. So we should keep on going, and somebody needs to get in there and make the situation right for all the co-workers, you know?
A spokeswoman for Schneider Logistics, the company that operates the Walmart warehouse, says the company expects all of its contractors to follow state labor laws. Schneider and Rogers Premier are also now the target of a class action lawsuit filed by current and former warehouse employees. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
Film schools don't have a lock on the business of inspiring young filmmakers to take up the art. Every year, the Santa Barbara Film Festival's 10-10-10 competition challenges young people to create a 10-minute film in 10 days. It's as tough as you think it is, and thrilling, too. Diane Bach attended this week's competition and filed this report.
We'd like to welcome you all here to this year's 10-10-10 press conference.
For this year's contest, more than 80 students from local high schools and colleges submitted samples of their best writing and filmmaking efforts to a panel of judges. At today's kickoff event, the finalists wait with nervous anticipation as names are drawn, matching 10 student screenwriters with the 10 student directors who will bring their stories to life.
Aaron Dalton from San Marcos High School. Aaron.
Wyatt Krush from Dunn High School.
Aaron Dalton and Wyatt Krush are meeting today for the first time. Dalton, a high school senior, will direct Krush's screenplay entitled Family Weekend. It's a comedy about a dysfunctional family set in Santa Barbara. After a quick introduction, the two sit down and review the screenplay.
Regarding these camera angles, this was really just to kind of clarify
I know exactly what you're talking about here. It's so, kind of that you're in his head.
Yeah, this is his perspective.
It's a really good opener. That's going to make it
Crutch, a high school junior, was a finalist in last year's competition.
It's like giving birth to a child and having to hand it over to a stranger a week after you've had it. So it's kind of a frightening experience, but also an exciting one.
Dalton shares some advice he received from last year's winner.
And he said, make sure that you work on your storytelling, that's the key to this, is the storytelling. You can make a pretty-looking film, but if you're not telling the story through the visuals, then it's not going to work.
Mickey Dusdevich coordinates the 10-10-10 student filmmaker competition, which began in 2001.
It's great to see these scripts come alive. What these kids can pull off in 10 days is amazing.
Okay.
A week later, with less than 48 hours until the deadline, action. Student director Aaron Dalton shoots a scene in his living room in which his actors enter an open house.
Instantly up, down.
Your time comes down.
Dalton's mom plays the realtor.
And action.
Can we have a look around?
Yeah, it's a two-bedroom, two-bath. It's an excellent school district.
Okay, cut.
So, Aaron, how are you doing?
Stressed to say the least. It took a really long time to actually get to filming, so I'm definitely behind right now. But it's all going to work out here.
For Mickey Dusdevich, seeing the students blossom through the program has been a highlight.
We've had many students actually contact us from the past that have won 10-10-10 and said it changed their career path. And some of them went off to NYU, and they never thought they would go off to NYU to be doing film. They were planning on a business career, and all of a sudden, everything's changed.
Santa Barbara's Business First Bank has sponsored the contest since the beginning.
With art programs being cut back so much over the recent years, this has become increasingly important to our community.
Joanne Finari is the bank's founder and president.
It's really quite amazing that the students are so appreciative because they don't get this opportunity elsewhere. And they get fabulous exposure through the Santa Barbara International Film Festival. It's pretty phenomenal. And we will contribute and we will be a sponsor of this forever and ever.
After a whirlwind 10 days spent gathering cast and crew, scouting locations, filming, and editing, the students hope to dazzle judges and a packed audience when their film screen this Sunday. For the California Report, I'm Diane Bach in Santa Barbara.
In a state this big, people are often splitting California in two. Many split north from south, others draw the line between urban and rural parts of the state. But both lines are based on stereotypes that don't really hold true the closer you look. One multimedia art installation that's just gone up challenges urban Californians to rethink their stereotypes about their rural neighbors. It's hard to imagine a setting more urban than a Bay Area Rapid Transit or BART station in downtown San Francisco. In the tunnels below Market Street, trains are constantly coming and going. This is where you'll find real rural, on ad placards in the trains. Mixed in between advertisements hawking local schools, sports teams, and housing developments, you'll spot farmer Mauricio Espinoza of Coachella staring back at you, his hands dusted with dirt. Or Ashley Phillips, a teenage rodeo trick rider from Tulare County, standing on top of her horse Jessie while spinning a lasso over her head. Real Rural is the work of writer and photographer Lisa Hamilton.
Over the last year, I traveled nearly 10,000 miles around the state of California, navigating between places that most city people have never heard of, Raisin City, Mecca, Surprise Valley. And along the way, I was meeting people, talking to them, listening to their stories, and photographing them.
What were some of the most compelling surprises for you on the road?
Well, the most obvious visible sign of rural poverty in California that, you know, you can see from the road is housing at a standard that's far below what I think most urban people would stand for. When you start talking with people in rural towns, you find that there are food drives happening where you have a line of 100 people at 7:30 in the morning waiting for the food drive to open.
And yet, as you say that, I think many urban Californians will be thinking, I've seen lines going around the block outside a church distributing food. I've seen substandard housing.
There are a lot more similarities than we think, and that's what this project is about, is helping people connect on a really basic human level.
Name me one special person that comes to mind that you talk to.
Sebastian Garcia is an 11-year-old boy in Thermal, California, down in Riverside County in the desert farming region just north of the Salton Sea and south of Palm Springs.
Hamilton photographed the pint-sized boxer in a classic fighting stance with his gloves up. At the project's website, realrural.org, you'll find the backstories to the photos and audio interviews. Hamilton went to a boxing gym where Garcia and other Riverside hopefuls spar. From his ringside seat, trainer Jose Pizarro talks about the dedication he sees in Garcia.
This little guy over there, I mean, he likes to brawl. You get him in the ring and he'll fight anybody. I mean, he could be almost dog-tired, barely walking. He'll say, is that all you got?
Sebastian Garcia's inspiration was plastered up on the walls of the gym.
There were posters of three brothers, all of whom had gone pro, one of whom had been a world champion. And Sebastian looked at the posters and he said, my uncle used to work in the fields with those guys. And suddenly I realized that when Sebastian strikes that pose, it's for real. This little dream of, you know, a pretty short, skinny kid could come true.
So what do the subjects of Hamilton's Gaze think about the project? Dairyman Dennis Leonardi drove 5 hours south from Ferndale in Humboldt County to offer his opinion.
The rural story is a story that needs telling. That gets lost sometimes in translation because there's this vast chasm between what people think they know and what is real. It's nice to feel part of a bigger project that's trying to do a constructive thing.
Leonardi was born into the dairy business in Ferndale. You might be surprised at his daily habit of heading to Starbucks when it opens at 5 a.m. for an Earl Grey tea. Maybe not so much by the milk he puts in it. But he's also on the board of his local hospital in Eureka. St. Joseph was deeply in debt a few years ago when Leonardi and his neighbors banded together to save it, and by extension, each other.
Community, it's a fabric that's dependent and reliant on every thread and every strand to make it strong.
The Real Rural posters will be up on BART for the next 2 months. In the fall, the photographs will be displayed at the California Historical Society Museum in San Francisco and on billboards in Sacramento and Los Angeles. But you don't have to wait to see pictures of Leonardi, Garcia, and the rest of the people in Real Rural. You'll find a link at californiareport.org. What you think about the stories you hear or want to hear on the California Report. Send your email to calreport@kqed.org. You can also comment on specific stories online. Just go to californiareport.org. While you're there, you'll see everything we archive. And if you feel like listening on your own time, check out our podcast. You can sign up for it at californiareport.org or look for us at iTunes. When promoters tag unknown musicians with a moniker like the new Dylan or the next Adele, they raise expectations that can be misleading or unfair or simply silly. The California Report's pop music critic Steve Hockman urges us to listen with open ears to the first album out from singer-songwriter B. Beamon.
The Sri Lankan Woody Guthrie? That's the tag that's been put on young San Francisco-based singer-songwriter B. Beamon. And why not? He plays a whole range of characters on his debut album, simply titled Beamon, including one that is very much in the Guthrie vein, the train-hopping vagabond of the opening track, Gutter Snipe.
I jumped the first train I saw.
she'll surely take me home. If I had a mama, at least I'd have a place to go.
Gutter Snipe runs just shy of 7 minutes long, music and images alike, fittingly for the subject matter, in no real hurry to reach or reveal their destination. And in its course, Guttersnipe introduces a talent marked by confidence and patience enough to let the characters tell their own stories in their own time. On Kimchi Line, one of the few songs on which he sounds anything like Guthrie, he's a desolate North Korean prisoner.
I'm on the Kimchi Line, and it's cabbage time. Well, I went up on the mountain to see if I could fly. Went down to the sea, Lord, and the sea was dry.
On the cookbook, he's a Wall Street scoundrel with a musical dreamscape echoing the famously class-conscious Kurt Weill and Bertolt Brecht.
We're cooking the books, we're cooking the books here. We were taking a bath, so I took to the mat. Everyone with a pension, pay attention. You just lost your job. How's your life? How's your wife and my kid?
And on Ballerina, he adds some twists to the tradition of desperado ballads, reminiscent perhaps of Nebraska by Bruce Springsteen, the quintessential Guthrie worshiper of recent times.
We got married in a Walmart, down by the Wrangler jeans. I'ma dress my baby like a vampire next week on Halloween.
Okay then, so who is B. Beamon? At least where is he in this music? Well, that's a tricky thing. Even the most deft writers of character songs, Tom Waits say, have their own character present, a clear point of view in play. There's something disconcertingly disorienting as Beamon's perspective seems to float as much as the music in his song Eye on You, which with its chiming, jazzy lilt drifts into Tim Buckley territory. Maybe the clue is in what's missing, which is the Sri Lankan part. There's nothing here, nothing musical at least, explicitly drawing on that heritage. Perhaps growing up in an immigrant culture gave him something of an outsider perspective that focused his observational lens, but that's unclear. He's second generation, born and bred here. And it raises the question as to whether his promoters are not doing him any favors with the Sri Lankan Woody Guthrie angle. It creates some unrealistic expectations that he's a folky equivalent of Anglo-Tamil rapper M.I.A. or something. Of course, being called the anything Woody Guthrie creates a whole set of unrealistic expectations. The good news is that B. Beamon, in this album, shows off talent enough to create his own expectations.
Life's been better, I've had more cheddar, but all my fetters run dry. I packed my bag and I'm headed for Saginaw. I'm guessing that you're tagging along.
Steve Hockman is a Los Angeles-based writer who covers pop music. He reviewed Beamon by B. Beamon.
He said that he was napping it all. The fine swine.
Al Young served as California's Poet Laureate from 2005 to 2008, the winner of awards and honors too numerous to mention. We've been lucky to have him contribute to the show many times over the years. Starting today, we're going to make it more of a regular stop. Al Young will write us a poem about California every month, and he's here in the studio to talk with us about this plan. Welcome, Al Young.
Hi, Rachel.
Why did you want to do this?
I'm a fan of the program of California Report, and listening to it over the years, I always was attracted to those little artistic fragments that come in occasionally. And I thought that poetry would really add a little spark to the show that would make it even better.
Tell us about this first poem that you've written. Where were you when the inspiration for it hit?
I think I was in San Francisco on my way back to the East Bay by way of BART. And it was one of those sort of blustery, really glacial days that had begun as kind of a sunny day and with a lot more warmth. And so I realized that the mutability, the changeability of California weather, like California regions, is just vast. And having traveled the state quite extensively during my poet laureateship, I was very fascinated by the micro-Californias that I encountered as I went from north to south and east to west and from coast to inland. And so I saw a universe that could be maybe infinitely explored through poetry.
Well, let's hear this poem.
Okay. February, a deep sea brew. Just chill and wait out winter. Death Valley sighs. Rain-drained L.A. winces, then pulls back for yet another long shot. Will Squaw Valley settle for recycled sewer water to keep snow slopes alive? From breadbasket Fresno, where fresh food hides, to poem-like Ukiah, haiku spelled backwards. February, a deep sea brew of troubling particles, waves, and winds, stays open-ended, up for grabs. 30 days hath September, April, June, and November. All the rest have 31 except February. February, which has what?
Do you already have an idea in mind for March?
I do.
You're set to go with this thing, aren't you? You could give us 12 poems right now.
Probably, if you gave me 12 hours.
Al Young, thank you for being here with us today.
Well, thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Al Young served as California's Poet Laureate from 2005 to 2008. He'll be a regular feature here on the California Report in the months to come. And that's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our director is Susie Racho. Seal Muller is our technical producer with additional engineering by Howard Gelman. The senior online editor is Gabriel Cohn with help from David Marks. Our interns are Andres Barraza and Liz Reed. Our producer is Victoria Malleon. Ingrid Becker is the senior producer. The executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. The California Endowment, building healthy communities because that's where health happens. More information at calendow.org. And the SunPower Corporation, offering high-efficiency solar energy solutions to households and businesses in California and worldwide. The world standard for solar. SunPowerSolar.com.